What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Davidson Hang podcast, where I get to interview amazing people and help share their wisdom with the world. Let me know your takeaways and feel free to connect with the guests. I'm aiming to build a community around coaching, self-development, leadership, where people are not afraid to be their most authentic versions of themselves. You can find us on video by searching the Davidson Hang podcast on YouTube. Welcome and enjoy the ride. Hey, how's everyone doing? I'm excited to introduce to you Emma Clark, which, is that how you pronounce it?
Elma. So if you think Elmo. That's how I used to teach kindergarten, and that's how the kids remembered my name. They call me Miss Elmo. So Elmo, and then switch out the O, Elma. So yeah.
Elma.
Yeah.
That would have been nice to get right. And that's not starting off on a good foot. But yeah, so I'm excited to share your thoughts. I know when we first connected, it was a lot of fun. LinkedIn is such an amazing company where you meet all these amazing people with a lot of different opinions and ideas. But I think most importantly, like, everyone at LinkedIn, like, generally has a good heart, you know?
Absolutely. Love that. Yes, love that.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm curious, you know, what made you like want to join LinkedIn? I know you've been on the team for a while. I'm sure there's been a lot of changes since when you first joined. Would love to hear, you know, how your journey has been at LinkedIn. And
Absolutely. Well, my decision to join LinkedIn wasn't a voluntary one. I was actually part of lynda.com. So I was hired by lynda.com. And for those who you may or may not be familiar with lynda.com, it's an online library. And LinkedIn acquired Lynda about 3.5 years ago. And I was part of that acquisition. So I became a LinkedIn member. Luckily, it's all good. But to kind of even address the question of why LinkedIn, I guess the question would then therefore be why Lynda. Honestly, Lynda found me, which is a blessing. I was on the job market on LinkedIn looking, and one day I just got a call, and it was someone from HR basically saying, we saw your resume online, and you look like you'd be a great fit. And we're with lynda.com. And I've never heard of lynda.com. Lynda.com is very popular, I guess, known in universities or on the West Coast. And I'm like, lynda.com. So I started, like, as she's talking, I'm like, what's lynda.com? That's a weird name. And I saw what it was. And basically what happened was, I had most of my job experience had been in IT, in hardware, computer, and then I took some time off and started teaching. I always loved training and working with kids, and then I had my son, and I thought it would be a great opportunity to transition out of the corporate world into teaching and being with kids. And so I got a job at my son's school as teaching kindergarten and also leading their computer program at the elementary school. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for 5 years. At the time I was married, and unfortunately that didn't quite work out. So I got divorced. And once that happened, I realized that if I am going to continue with a certain lifestyle and take care of my son the way it is. And what happened was, I wanted to kind of keep my son in the same school system. He had developed friendships, relationships. And I felt like if we moved out of the neighborhood or the area, he would have to start doing that. And so I thought, well, it sounds as if the corporate world is calling me back. But I kind of was at this place where I loved teaching and love education. And then I also still had a love for computers. And that was where a lot of my experience was rooted in. For many years at that time, I had over almost maybe 20 years of experience in the computer field. So I thought, what if I could combine both? Computer teaching. And I had no idea what that job looked like. So I thought, well, maybe I could do maybe work for like a school, you know, in their IT department, somehow support their, hardware, software installations, whatever. So I started doing that. And then I realized that's not quite what I want to do. I'm in the environment, but I'm actually not involved in the education thing. So not quite what I wanted. And so I started searching, and I simply just went out to internet and started searching like computer and education. And I started seeing e-learning. And I'm like, I've never heard of e-learning, believe it or not. So I'm like, and I started researching what e-learning was all about and what that whole industry. And more and more I said, oh, okay, this sounds like, you know, having in line with what I want, education and technology combined and online. And so I just started doing that. And then I started looking at skill sets that were required. And so what I did was I edited my resume to reflect those, you know, skill set. And on LinkedIn, I just basically said, this is my experience. I've been teaching and I also computer, and I'm looking for a job that will help me to get into e-learning and da 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 da. And so hence, I guess Linda saw that and they said, that's you're who we're looking for. Somebody who's been involved with kids and teaching that and whatever. And I started talking to her and she's then said, okay, we'll set up an appointment with my manager who I loved, one of my favorite managers. And I had an interview with her, and on the phone, she goes, oh my gosh, you're so passionate about what you do. And I said, but I don't have any experience in e-learning for the position that they wanted me. She says, oh no, she says, you have the experience we want. She says, you can learn the product, you can learn that. She says, what we're looking for, you have. And they brought me up to California and the rest is history. And then I started working and learning more about e-learning, and it was just a natural fit. A lot of it is just working with my clients, you know, how best to leverage LinkedIn Learning. And what I love about what I do is the fact that I'm honestly helping people. You know, sometimes you have a job and you're like, well, I do the job, I get paid well, I like what I do, but you're not seeing any, you know, results like that.
Yeah.
I love when I go on site or I hear stories about, you know, students or someone who got promoted and I've heard many stories that like that where, you know, I if it wasn't for Linda at the time or now LinkedIn Learning, but at the time it was like, if it wasn't for Linda, I wouldn't have gotten that job or I wouldn't have had the courage, you know, to apply because I learned this. So I think that's why even till today, 6 years later in the position, transitioning from Linda to LinkedIn Learn, I still love it because I get to hear those stories, the impact that I'm having. So I feel as if my job is more than just a job that I'm making a salary. I'm actually impacting people's lives. And so, you know, that's my little story about what I do.
I'm curious, have you noticed, like, I'm sure the culture from Linda itself is different from LinkedIn, right? Is it pretty similar even? Or do you notice like a lot of different changes now that, you know, you're a bigger company?
Yes. Okay. So there are some similarities in the culture, meaning I think Linda's culture and the similarities with LinkedIn is one, like an open, in some respects, there is a level of where... sort of a little bit, I want to say a little bit of a down to earth in a sense, like, you know, not very corporate, because I grew up, I worked for a while in New York and I came from a very corporate environment. So we're very, you know, more conservative, more, you know, more corporate environment. I think the culture that I like about Linda and LinkedIn Learning or LinkedIn, I should say, it's one where you can sort of be yourself, a little laid back. And so I kind of like that. And then also sort of feeling comfortable enough with my direct managers to have like comfortable relationships. And I think one of the benefits I have, honestly, and maybe that's why I probably feel like there isn't a difference, is because my managers are actually from Linda. So maybe that's where I don't see much of a difference, is because all the folks I report to, my leadership, direct leadership, are all folks from Linda. So I think there is that, it's carried over. And so I don't see much difference. I think where I see the difference is probably the higher level where, and it's just a natural thing, I'm assuming. Obviously, LinkedIn being a much bigger company, you're more detached from the executive leadership. With Linda, it was normal if you're in CARP to be in the cafeteria and Linda or her husband, who was also the exec, you know, partner and also at the time CEO, they would be in the lunch line. Or they may sit, they may be looking for a table and there's an open spot and they say, oh, can I sit here? And you're like, oh, nope. But they never acted that way. So it was normal to interact with executive leadership, in the cafeteria, you know, the Christmas party. Linda would like greet everybody, take a picture with everyone at the door. But again, smaller company, we're like 500 to 600 employees. But there was a very close relationship. One of the things, and to give you an example, and also one of the reasons why I said yes, it was just profound to me at the time, was when I went for the interview. And I interviewed again with the senior vice president for sales. The top person reports directly to Linda. First of all, he wanted to interview me. And I'm like, okay, I'm down here. You know, in my mind, you don't, who, at my level and for the position I'm in, I wouldn't think that the senior vice president would want to interview with me, which he did. But even despite that, so one could say smaller organization, not a big deal, not much, high, you know. But what was, it really impressed me was we had lunch, and as I was getting up to take my tray, so I had my interview with him was over lunch in the cafeteria. And as I was getting up to take my tray, he goes, oh, no, you're my guest. I take your tray. And that to me was, you know, there, it said a lot. Mm. In the sense that he saw me as his guest, that he respected me and honored me by taking my tray. So for him, it didn't matter what my position was. He just saw, you're my guest. I treat you. This is how I treat my guests. I don't care who you are. And so to me, that was, I was like, I want to work here. I want to work here. Because that to me, if that's executive leadership, that means it's going to trickle down. It gave me an insight into what the organization is about. Like, so that was one of my, the deciding factor of like, I want to work here. If that's a culture, if that's how the executive leadership treat folks like me, then this is the place I want to be. Now, I'm not able to experience that at LinkedIn, obviously much bigger organization. So I feel a little detached. And again, not LinkedIn's fault, just natural occurrence in a larger organization. Mm. So yeah.
I'm curious, what was Linda like and her husband, if you don't mind sharing? I mean,
no, absolutely. They were, okay, so Linda and her husband were both professors. He was an art professor, well, they both were. But they were very, very down to earth. In a sense, yeah, very, just really down to earth folks. Very just... like, again, I would be at events and sometimes she would like be standing right next to me and I'm, you know, like you're quivering. Okay, this is Linda. You should stand next to you. And she just like say, hey, so what do you think about that? Just the way they acted, you couldn't pick them. You couldn't pick them out of the room to say they were leadership. You couldn't. It was hard to pick them out and say, okay, who's in charge? They weren't like that. One of the interesting things too about Linda, I don't know if you ever saw the Linda logo, if you're Linda.com, she looked like that. She looked exactly like that. So matter of fact, when she sold the company to LinkedIn, the next time we saw her, she cut her hair, she colored it. She said, I've been wearing this hair for 10 years and this look. She couldn't even change her glasses because she had to look like the logo. So she says, and so that kind of gives your insight too. Like even the person, they were very funny. Her husband was very funny. They were just like very laid back folks. And she had a passion for education. I think she's in a lot of philanthropic things now with like with young girls, women. But to even give you an insight, like for example, I don't know if we still do this, but I know like with Linda, she like for example. Organizations like the Red Cross, certain, you know, nonprofit organizations like that got access to Linda free. Mm-hmm. She just felt like she's like, they're helping folks. This is how I help. So if you're a Red Cross, you didn't pay for Linda, you know? So that kind of gives it, for her, it wasn't about the money. It wasn't about the profits, which is why I feel like, and I think the company got started to get so big that, which is why I think I was played into the decision. It was becoming for them, I feel, and she kind of said that in some of her speech, it was starting to become a business. And, you know, they took it to a place where it was a business. Because a matter of fact, they hired a CEO, and because she was like, this is not what we do. You know, we did this because we were passionate about learning and teaching people. And now it's become a business. And you can tell that's not who they are. It was about, right. And at some point you have to realize that this is a business, and you have to start to treat it like a business. And you it's profits, and you know, you can't be giving this away and doing that. And so, but again, it just gives you insight into who they are. One of the things about her husband too, his name slips my mind right now. Whenever he did his presentations, it was all animated. So like if he was going through a chart, and he drew cats a lot. I think one of his signature thing were cats. So even his PowerPoints, there were never slides with words. There were always graphic art. He would draw, and he would draw stuff with an arrow going here. So it was always interesting when he would get up to speak or do a presentation. It was fun because it was all graphics and you could relate to it. So even when he was doing, you know, like a executive status financial thing of, you know, where the company's at, you know, it would be a formal thing, and here he comes, and he's, you know, you have a drawing of a cat, and the cat's jumping here to show increase in profits. And yeah, so that just kind of gives insight into how they are. I loved it. It was a very close organization, and so I kind of miss those days somewhat.
So far cry from when you were at GSK, right? For instance, like,
oh yeah. No. Okay. So when we would have our sales kickoff just like LinkedIn does. The entire sales and we do sales and the CSM, all of that, but the entire sales would all fit in one room. You know, I remember the first time we had a sales kickoff, the GSK with LinkedIn. We were like Linda folks, we were like little fishes in a big ocean. I remember I was going up the escalator, and I looked back, and all I saw was people, like just people upon people. And we were totally overwhelmed. We were totally overwhelmed. Yeah. And because of that too, because we were so much smaller, even for the holiday parties, they would know wherever you were, whatever city you were in, the company flew you into California for the holiday parties. So we always got to participate. So that's probably also a difference too with LinkedIn, is that because I work remotely, I'm not always involved in certain things that happen on site. Whereas with Linda, if there was anything like that culturally festive, they would fly you in for it. So if it was the middle of the year and they were having some big summer thing, you would fly in for it. If it was the holidays, you'd fly in for it. And they gave you good holiday prices, like 1 year, every employee, you know, got like $100 Amex card, gifts. So this was outside of your whatever, just holiday gifts you get there. And that's not just the only gift. So I'm saying every single employee. So for the holiday party, she'd stand at the door and she'd hand you a bag. And in that bag may be a holiday gift card. And then I remember 1 year with that gift card, we all got a, what do you call those speakers? The JBL?
Yeah, the Jabber.
Jabber. Is that what it's called? The one that's, you know, that they're really good. Those are small ones. I think it's Jabber, right? JBL or something. I know because my son uses it. And when I came home, and he goes, oh, where'd you get that from? But that's why when I say every single employee got one. It wasn't just the sales folks. It was everybody got one, and an American Express gift card, you know, $100. And so they did stuff like that where you just feel like we're just a one big family. And, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's hard to be family when you have 16,000 people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like those families with what, 12 kids, where the younger ones have to start taking care of, no, the older ones have to start taking care of the younger ones. The parents don't have time to even pay attention to the young kids anymore because they're overwhelmed. They're just trying to put food on the table.
You know what's crazy? My second week at LinkedIn was SK last year.
Really? Oh, wow. That had to be interesting for you. Did you come from a company like LinkedIn or... small?
I think how many people did we have? I think like, I mean, it was decent size. I think it was like I'm trying to, man, that's bad that I don't know this. Maybe like 800 people or something like that.
Okay, so you're similar to like Linda. So yeah, it had to have been overwhelming your second week.
Yeah.
I guess it was overwhelming for me in my when we first did it too. So yeah, it's overwhelming when you see that many people. And can I tell you, so you did it last year, right? Was it with the global team?
Yeah.
Okay. Was it everybody from the global team? Because I think honestly last year was not as big as the first year when we did the merger. Because I think they scaled it down. Because how many people were there last year, if you remember?
1,900.
Okay, it may have been about the same size. Yeah, it probably was about the same size. It just seems as if maybe because the first time, maybe it felt bigger because it was the first time. It just felt massive, like the entire California was there. So yeah, it was about the same. Matter of fact, yeah, it was around the same. It wasn't that much. Yeah, it just felt, yeah, I was totally overwhelmed by it. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm sad that we don't get that this year, you know, like, especially for you because you're remote. So it's like even you probably look forward to that, like even more so, right?
Yeah, I do. Because being remote, again, like I said, you don't get to participate in activities like that as much. Not at all. So, you know, and even just those little offsite things like, you know, oh, this group is going here, or, you know, we're having a picnic, or we're going for a hike, or I don't get to participate in those things. So yeah, occasions like SK, even though it can be a little overwhelming and sometimes I even don't get to connect as much, but just being able to connect with some folks or even my core team is nice. Yes, so I'll miss that. So it's going to be interesting to see what the virtual is like. But it's not going to be the same because you're here. You know, it's like you're home. And it's, yeah. So hopefully for 2021, we'll go back to some normalcy, you know.
We'll
be able to do that. And I'm assuming that they probably won't be having all those, you know, the trips that, you know, the top salespeople. Linda used to also do that. The top salespeople would go away on their trips to wherever, Hawaii or Singapore or Cayman Islands. And so I guess that's all scrapped for this year, I'm sure. Those sales folks, because they do it really big. They do it really big. So I'm not sure if were you familiar with those trips?
I haven't been.
But you've heard of them and how big they do them. Yeah, they go all out. Yeah.
Which one was your favorite? Have you gone on a bunch of them?
No, I haven't. I have not been. I haven't qualified. It's usually for the sales folks, and then from the support team, like the CSMs or the TCs, they'll usually pick one person from each. So then, you know, the sales team you're talking about, you could have maybe 50, 60 people from the sales team, and then you may have one CSM and one TC person. So it's really hard to, you know, I'm not a superstar like that to qualify. You have to be a superstar.
It's so much more competitive here. Like my last company, it was crazy. Like 50% of like the salespeople went. So it was like much easier. But at LinkedIn, it's way harder to make it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that the sales, because after a while, a lot of the Linda sales folks left because the sales structure or pay structure, commission structure was a lot different. Like you said, with Linda, as you said, it was like, okay, if you meet, I don't know, 103% of quota or whatever that number was, you went. So some years, right. So as long as you met quota, whatever that quota was to qualify for the trip, if you made it, you made it. So some years you could have 50 people, another year you could have 80 people. The number fluctuated. Whereas with LinkedIn, from what I hear, it's a set number of people. And so if the quota was, I don't know, to qualify for the trip was 120 and you made 130, still doesn't mean guarantee that you're going.
Right.
Or, you know, you can make 150 and you're thinking, woohoo, I'm going. And next, you know, 51 people did better than you, so you're not gonna make it. So I know a lot of the Linda sales folks left. I shouldn't say a lot, but a significant amount of them left. It was too competitive, like you said. It was just so different than the Linda pay structure, and it was so they left. And a lot of them went to competitors like Pluralsight. A lot of our Linda executives went to Pluralsight. So if you look at Pluralsight, a lot of them are Linda executives. Yeah, because Pluralsight was just starting up. So at one point, if you look at Pluralsight content, it mirrors Linda a lot. Yeah, so a lot of the executives went to Pluralsight, and some went to Pluralsight and some went to Degreed. So a lot of Degreed was actually started up by a few Linda people. Yeah, Degreed and Pluralsight. Yeah.
I feel like I'm learning so much.
Yeah. So they went, and so even some CSMs went to either Degreed or Pluralsight. But so if you look at the executive level, and if you look at their profiles, you'll see that there were ones at Linda.
That's interesting. Well, this is like a weird segue, but did you still want to talk about like the race conversations? Or
whatever. We can talk about it. Whatever we want to talk about. Absolutely. Sure.
Yeah, I know we had like a pretty long discussion last time. Mm-hmm. I'd love just to get like your perspective on what's going on right now. I think it's important for us to be like accountable and not be victims. Like I think it's always like more empowering when we have like a mentality of like, hey, like I'm going to empower myself, right? Obviously,
right.
You know, there's certain things that there's obvious like that's not good. But I guess we'd love just to hear your thoughts on, you know, what's going on and maybe how we can like empower ourselves to move forward in a progressive manner.
Mm-hmm. I guess maybe how I will probably approach it is maybe just touch on what has happened since my, if you want to say, coming out. but even after you and I chatted, because we chatted after, was it All Hands, I think? Was it maybe? Okay. So after the All Hands, there are two other occasions where I built up the nerve to say anything. And one of them was on Farhan's coffee chat. I'm not sure if you were on there.
Oh, that was where I met. That was okay. Where I met you. Yeah.
The Farhan. Okay. So after that, in addition to meeting you, I met a whole other bunch of folks that reached out to me just in addition to yourself, which was surprising. And then we had a CSM, All Hands, and I commented very similar message, which was everyone, you know, the Black community is a diverse community. And so we're all going to have different perspectives. And LinkedIn needs to create an environment where everyone's comfortable sharing their perspective. Mm. The perspective may be similar to what majority think, but somewhat different. Mm. Or just be able to share their experiences or the impact, whatever it might be. Whatever. We're here to learn. We're here to share. We're here to, as the saying goes, we're all in it together. So why not all share together? Yeah. And I kind of said that. Well, I said that, and I was like, "What in the world?" So how I approached it was for that session, there was a lady that was sharing her experience coming from the Hispanic community and as a minority, and she was addressing racism as, you know, and for her, and she told her story about her journey here, with her mom to the U.S. and so on. And so I said, okay, I'll take that same angle. And so my approach was, instead of just telling them what I thought, I said, you know, just like A, shared her story, really appreciated, very insightful. I think it would be great to take the opportunity. And I, of course, it took me a while to build up the nerve because I kept saying, no, just sit back, don't say anything. It's one thing on the All Hands where I don't know most of the folks, but I'm looking at people whose faces I know, and I know what some of their thoughts are. But I said, I just want to share my story. I said, I want to share my story. And so I just shared my story of coming to America at 19 and how I got to where I am. I was just a different perspective. And I says, I think it's helpful. And after I did that, oh my gosh, people again reached out and says, oh, you're brave. And I could see someone in the chatter, very brave. Thank you. And I've chatted with a few of the folks, even one manager on our team. I'm like, whoa, surprisingly. So I've chatted with a few folks, and I think what I'm learning, or what I learned, is that there are quite a few people who think like me or have the same perspective, in the sense of there are different perspectives and we should all share. And ironically, the perspectives were different, but not the same as mine. You know, so it wasn't about having the same perspective or the same opinion. What I found from talking to some of these folks, that their opinions weren't necessarily the same as mine. Where we had common ground was that we all want the opportunity to share. And that's what I got from it. And I think that's what we're not being given. That's not the environment that we have. And even if leadership thinks that environment is there, we're not feeling it. We're not feeling that. And so, you know, like, for just to give you an example of the variety, like one lady wanted to share with me that, you know, she's biracial. And so when she hears terms like Black Lives Matter, she doesn't like it. It not in a bad way, but she says it makes her uncomfortable. And the reason is because her mom's white, her dad's black. So when she hears all Black Lives Matter, then it kind of separates her from her mom. Her mom's white. So in her eyes, I don't see one of my parents differently than the other. So for me, all lives matter. And she said, so she says, that's why I don't like the term.
Yeah.
I prefer, because she says, for me, it makes me feel like I'm having to choose a parent. And says, even though that's not what I'm being told to do, but I feel that way. And so she says she wish she could share that to kind of give how she feels, you know? And she says, but I feel like if I do, people are going to think, oh, I'm condemning Black Lives Matter, and that's not what I'm saying. And she said, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, I just want to offer a perspective that when someone says they don't like the term, it's not because maybe they're not supportive of it, or they're not supportive of the action, or the campaign, or whatever it is. It's just, I'm not comfortable because of my personal situation.
Yeah, that's an awesome story, because and I think to your point, more of those stories would be awesome, because
right,
often those people feel afraid to say something, to your point, like, what if I get a slap on the wrist? Like, what if people,
right,
like, get off boo, what if I get booed off the stage?
Right. And her point too was when someone says all lives matter, don't be so quick to condemn them to feel like they're saying it because they're against Black Lives Matter. It's not always so. So that was her point. Her point could be the reason why they prefer to say this might be just like for my situation. So it helps to have the conversation. So why, you know, so she said she felt like she wished she could share, and then for someone to say, well, why don't you like it? Or why do you prefer to say that? And then she could explain. So, and I think that's where she says, well, she was saying that's where her frustration comes in, because if you don't agree, or full stop, I don't want to hear what it is, I don't want to hear what you have to say, and that's the feeling that she gets. So she, you know, she had that story to share. And then, like, one other gentleman said that it's not that he has a different perspective, but what he's in a group, it's a social impact group that he's in, and there are these conversations, and he says he's heard conversations like mine. So he says he would have loved to say, hey, I'm part of a social impact group, and here's some of the feedback that I hear from my group. But he says even that, sharing what he's getting from his group, may be perceived that he's not agreeing. Because he's just so worried about the perception. It's almost, again, if you're anything that you bring to the table must align. And if it doesn't, that's where the fear comes in. Because he said, I actually agree with the majority. Like, you know, he says, I'm kind of But I'm a part of this group where different people have different opinions. And I'd love to share some of those that I've heard from my impact group. But he says, I'm not doing that. So he was sharing that with me.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because I do think we have like a long way to go. But I feel like at least at LinkedIn, we have these conversations. Whereas like my previous companies, no one would ever even have any of these conversations, you know, at least not in a public forum, like maybe just one-on-one.
Right. Like one-on-one.
Small groups, like just on, just in your team or just with some of your colleagues, but it would never be like a whole town hall to talk about like this, you know? Like,
right.
So I think for me, like I'm happy that we're having these conversations, but yeah, I think, it's the thing that I think find that's like frustrating is that there's like the politics aspects of things, right? Where it's like, and then people say like, oh, like, do they actually care? Or is it just to look good? Because like, this is what, you know, this would actually help us get more business. I think deep down inside, I think most people, like Jeff Weiner, is like, he obviously wants like good things. But sometimes people question like the intentions are like, well, are they doing this just because like they, you know, it looks good? Or like, I don't know. It's hard to really know.
But I think if, in all fairness, I think some of it is done because for business reasons, but in all fairness, it is a business. Mm. So, you know, and so I think there are elements of it. So for example, even when there were comments that they deemed offensive and the company was like, we don't represent that or we push that, which is I think the position that a lot of organizations are in,
yeah.
Where a lot of organizations are saying, oh, Black Lives Matter or having a banner or we support, please don't, you know, because at the end of the day, it is a business. And it's not a personal business. They have to report to shareholders or boards of directors. And so they're reporting to someone. So even though they might be CEO or top of, you know, executive level, they're still reporting to someone.
Right.
And so when decisions that they make is to represent the company. So I always sometimes wonder, like you said, do they truly believe some of the things that they put out in public? Like, well, this is where as a company we stand.
Mm-hmm.
No, as a comp, they represent the company and whatever the general stakeholder, the shareholders or the board or whoever, you know, that's they report to say, this is where we stand. So I kind of get it, the business aspect of it. And, you know, it's kind of a hard place to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, although I do think that a lot of it culturally that they do have certain beliefs, but I think some of it is also rooted in business, which is why I think a lot of companies do things like, oh, we support, so we'll do this, anything so they don't lose, you know, consumers or whatever it might be. You know, you have that because at the end of the day, when this blows over, what's the impact? And that's why they fall under the pressure of whatever is pushed out in the media or people say, you know, stop the ads for this or don't buy their this or don't buy that. So at the end of the day, it's a business. I kind of get it. Unfair position to be in. But I think, again, kind of going back to the whole thing, and you kind of touched on it too, is like, it's almost like you have to choose sides. Mm. And you can't have a position where both things are true.
Huh.
Like one of the I watched this, lately I've been watching a lot of podcasts or listening to a lot of podcasts and watching a lot of these like conferences or webinars with a lot of Black economists who have similar viewpoints to mine, where a lot of this is rooted in economics and education and learning. But one of them really did a cover it, and the topic was what are the real Black issues? Is it structural or cultural or both? And I would argue it's both. You know, that's just my stance.
Right.
You know, it's not one or the other. It's both. But I feel like a lot of the conversation is just focused on the structural. And there's a cultural element to it. Mindset. I feel like we could fix all the issues we deemed structurally, although a lot of it I don't, this personal opinion, but let's just say, let's go with it. We want to fix all the things that we deem structural problems, you know, housing problems, problems with the police, you know, reform, do all of that. But if you don't fix some of the cultural problems, meaning, you know, the mindset of a young person in inner city, giving them feeling like they have hope, that they can be good at anything they set their mind to, that they can't only succeed unless they get the help of the government. If you don't change that mindset, you could fix all of this. You're going to still have certain issues. Certain things are not going to go away. You know, they're not going to, you may have that young kid who goes, well, maybe feeling like, I don't know if I can go to college and I can't play a sport, so I'm doomed, you know? Whereas, can you write poetry? You know, what do you like to do? Or asking that question, what it is like you can do with whatever your talent, your innate ability. We all have innate abilities. We all are good at something, you know? Tell me what you can do with that, or show me, and give them that excitement. So there's a cultural thing, or kind of like, you know, as a young girl, you know, some of the things that you can aspire for, or change certain lifestyles, whatever. It's a combination. And I think part of the cultural part of it too, for me, is accountability. It's like in any relationship, if you're going to succeed, not only one person can be working on it. You know, you can't, the wife can't say, well, which is what happens sometimes. It's, he's the problem. You know, you go to the marriage counselor and you point out the husband's fault. It's his problem. He's the one, fix him. Yeah. But never stop to say, well, what do I do to contribute? Even if he's doing the following things, am I contributing? Is he reacting to me? Or what can I do to create an environment to help him be better? What can I do? What role do I play in it? Maybe I know, I don't know, I'm just using random things, but maybe let's say your issue with him is that he gets upset easily. Well, if you know that, maybe I therefore don't push his buttons, or maybe, you know, maybe don't use words that I feel like are hurtful words for him because of his background or his childhood. You know, what role are you playing in it? And what I feel like is that there isn't enough accountability from the Black community. And that's coming to me from Black leaders teaching that, you know, as a young child or young, you know, this is what you do, you know. You make sure you are doing this, and we also need to fix this, but you make sure that you are doing this.
50-50. You know? Yeah.
And I don't want to get too current, but just a simple example could be, and I know this might be a little controversial, but if simply saying to a young person, you get stopped by the police, you don't resist. You kind of, yes, sir, no, whatever it might be, officer. But there's a thing where you're not helping the situation or helping yourself if you're going to now get into an argument. So it's going to piss the cop off.
Right.
Doesn't mean you're justifying his behavior. He should still have self-control. But are you really helping if you're mouthing off or resisting arrest? What is your role in it? Yeah. Even at the end of the day, he's ultimately wrong for his reaction. But you have to pause and said, did I play any role in that behavior? Not excusing it, not justifying his behavior, but what role did I play? And if it means simply to save the life of someone else and to say, listen, you know what? See what happened to this person? When so-and-so, this is how you need to behave. I don't want that happening for you, you know? So that's what I mean by accountability. And I don't see enough of that. So again, kind of going back, is it structural, cultural, or both? And I think we need to be doing both. Also, I feel like we need to, and that's why I think it's important to have the open dialogue where all different perspectives, because now we can hear different solutions, different impact, you know? Like one gentleman that I talked to brought this perspective, and I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that. I spoke to him yesterday, and he grew up in, I guess, in the inner city in Chicago, he was telling me. And he said one thing that was always interesting to him as he was growing up, and he's actually at LinkedIn and does data analytics or stuff. And I'm like, whoa, you're one of those weird people with all those numbers crunching in your head, you know, because I can't do it. I'm like, my brain would just be like smoking. So anyway, he said, and I think the reason why it stood out for him even now, because he's into the economics and data, he says, oh yeah, he says, I eat data up. And but he says, just looking around the community and small businesses, he says, when he looks around, he sees, he says, a lot of the small businesses in the inner cities are owned by other minorities, immigrants. So he says, you'll see, you know, who, and he said to me, because he was asking me, and I wasn't sure where he was going with this. He goes, so let me ask you, who owns the nail salons? Who owns the grocery store? Who owns the gas stations? Who owns the little restaurant down the street? He says, oh, and he goes, you're Jamaican, right? He says, you know, every corner you go, you find a Jamaican restaurant, right? And he goes, you find a Chinese restaurant, right? The Indian owns the gas station, nail salon, the stores. He says, when I look around, I don't see much blacks, my people, owning much. It's our community. Don't you think majority of the businesses should be ours? He says, what I see is other immigrants. And he says, not just other, he says other blacks. He says from Jamaica. He says, I see Cuban restaurants. I'll even see maybe an African restaurant. He says it's not a race. It's not a black thing. He says, I had to stop and say to myself, why is that?
Yeah.
And he said, so it has to be a mindset. It has to be something that we're not teaching our young black people. We're not teaching them something. And part of that might be economics, the importance of school, learn. He says that mindset. And so it was profound to me. It's like, whoa. So even Sim, and he says, I'd love to like even put that out there. He says, on the all hands, I'd love to say, why is it that? And just, he says, I don't have the answer necessarily. It's just, I'd propose a question like, okay, we all see it. Walk through the black community. Who owns most of the small businesses? He says, other immigrants from other countries. And he says, you know why? And he says, I can tell you, they all have something in common. The entrepreneurship mindset. I'm going to own my own business. I'm going to do this. And he says, it doesn't matter what country. So he says, so therefore, if why can they have that? How do they get that? And so he says, so that's what he says with his blog. He says, I want to start teaching that, that entrepreneurial mindset. That you can do, you can have, you know, say, do whatever it is. Because he says, when I walk around, I don't see us owning anything, which is interesting. I don't think he says anything. He just says he doesn't see as many. Considering that it's their community, they should have more of the small businesses. But they have folks who come from other countries with nothing. And then what he said, and he says, with nothing. He says they have nothing. And yet before you know it, they're opening their own business. And he says, we're here in America. And we can't, and we're not doing enough of that. And so he says, that's what I want to tackle that.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. Cause yeah, like you're right. Like I know a lot of Caribbean people and yeah, like they definitely hustle. Like they're like, like networking. They're out like
two jobs doing this. Yeah.
Asians are like that, or Indians are like that. Get here right. And you're not sleeping one bit.
Right.
And it's interesting because, like, you know, people from Ghana or people, you know, like, the skin color is still dark. And, you know, so it's like, I wonder why it's such a different.
Right. And that's what he was saying. He says, so, and that's what he says, from Africa, wherever they're, you know, they'll open a shop, they'll open up a store, they'll, and so he says, it has to be something cultural in us. And so he says, that's what he wants to tackle. But he says, we're not having those conversations. You're not allowing for us to put that out there and says, okay. So yes. So some of us are working on the structural thing, but here's an area here. And maybe this is where we talk about allyship. He was saying, this is where people can probably step up or, you know, I don't know, mentor, do some more mentoringship, you know, and he says, I don't know what the solutions are, but he says, that's why we need to have the conversation. Cause you can have people who have great ideas. But if you can't put the problem out on the table, if you can't be honest and put it out on the table and say, these are the problems, you can't fix it. You can't address it. You can't get any solutions. And so he says, that's where he said he would have loved to be able to feel comfortable just asking that question or just putting that out there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because I bet you if someone did say anything that we just mentioned, it would be a shitstorm.
Oh, Oh yeah, you wouldn't find my body. You wouldn't find my body. You wouldn't find us.
In World War III, like it'd be like,
yeah, got it. Right. Can you even think about what he's saying? Because he's implying certain things. But I get what he was saying. And so, matter of fact, when he said that, I said, you know what? I used to do. I haven't done it a lot because I've been traveling. But I belong to the foster care foundation here in Gwinnett County. And I said, you know what? I went immediately and I looked at the Boys Girls Club, and I said, I'm signing up. Matter of fact, I was trying to call them, but I guess maybe because of COVID, I don't want to just donate. I'm tired of just the donations it's doing. And it's like, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the saying where you feed a man a fish for a day, teach him how to fish, you feed him for life. So sometimes, yeah, it's great to donate and give your money, but what are you don't know where that money is going and exactly how it's been used. How about, so I said, no, I'm gonna call again. Cause after he told me that, I said, that's it. We need to start really changing the mindset of some of our young folks. As we're working on reforms of all the different structural things, we need to be also working on the young folks, change their mindset, give them the entrepreneurial spirit, show them examples. Hey, look at the immigrant over there. Came here with nothing, zero, zip. Some don't even know how to speak the language.
Yeah.
What are they doing? So why are we not? Get them riled up. Get them riled up in a different way instead of riled up with anger and how about, yeah, you know what? You're right. I want to do that too. Yeah. Get them riled up. And that's what he was saying. I want them to get riled up in a different way. Mm. You know, no, I want to have my own business. You're right. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do that too. Yeah. You know, yes, let's go.
Yeah. And now you're making me feel much better about myself because like, I'm more on the doing side where, so I mentor a lot of immigrants, like, you know, from India or from Dominican Republic or Colombia or like, you know, like I do a lot of that mentoring and sometimes I'm like, oh man, I wish I can just donate more, but you're making me feel better. Cause I'm like, I'm putting in the man hours, you know, I'm like public.
Means a whole,
yeah.
A whole lot more. And I always, like I said, yeah, to donate, but I feel as like that's so temporary. And sometimes the students don't necessarily feel the effects, or the kids or don't necessarily feel the effects of that. Whereas your time, I think, is so much more valuable, you know, because you get the results, you get that mentorship that they need. And so I said, you know, I don't know exactly where else. And I used to do a lot of that when I taught in kinder, at elementary, when I would, you know, sub in fourth grade or fifth grade or something like that. But I said, you know what, let me go back and reach out to the Boys Girls Club, show them stories, talk to them, help them with whatever it is, mentoring. And I feel as if those are some of the things I'd love to hear us on the allyship programs. When I look at the resources on allyship, a lot of it is to me so negative and feeds into more anger, fuels more anger. And it's okay to have some of that. But we need to supplement it with, okay, so what else can we do that has lasting effects, that really has impact that we can see? You know, and if it's 1, 2, 3 young people, and, you know, sit with them, help them with their resume, help them with their, you know, their math or whatever it is that they need. Like you said, the mentoring that you're doing, you know, that's going to be lasting.
I'm pretty lucky. I think in the New York office, it's like there's a lot of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, back when it was normal, I mean, now it's still okay because a lot of it's virtual, like just video calls like this to help people with their resumes and stuff. But it was at one point there was like an event every day where you could volunteer for like high schoolers and college students and like a lot of that. Like,
oh, really?
It was a lot.
Okay, that's good.
But to your point, like not everyone got involved with that, right? It was like it was maybe like 10% of the company that got involved with it. But it was always the same people that you saw at all these different things, right? And then I would say the majority of the people were like, I'm trying to make 150K, you know, like, and last year only made 130, or you know what I mean? Like it was so the bulk of it, I think we've more people skew on the side of like, well, I want to make 250 this year, you know? But
right.
You know.
So that's, which is why I feel like a lot of times people are asking, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? You really want to help? Here's how you can.
Mm-hmm.
Give up your time. Give up your time. Yeah. And I saw, actually, I shared with the team, and I'll send you that link. Maybe you've seen it. Have you seen that Success Up for Life video by Denzel Washington where he gave a speech, graduation speech?
No, I don't think I did.
I'll send you the link. I sent it to a bunch of folks and they were like, oh my gosh. And actually over the weekend, I saw it years ago when like 2 years ago when he first did it. But over the weekend, I think I watched it 5 times. And it was really the success to life. And he was just talking about his journey and ultimately what he said. And he ends it by saying, and I'm gonna make a note to send it to you, video. But he ends it by saying something like, don't, it's not about what you have, right? It's not about what you have, but what you give. So go out there and give, you know, like, and he was saying, give up your time, help. And that's what he says, help someone. And it's not just giving. And that's why sometimes, you know, I think folks feel like they, you know, they donate and I'm done. Yeah. And I feel good, you know? Okay. So it makes you feel better because you can say, oh yeah, I donate. And that's helpful. And almost feel as if you should donate and also do this, if you're going to do that then, where you can have real good impact. So, but that's what I got from that gentleman after listening to him. I says, you know what? I need to go back and start doing that. I did a lot of it when I was teaching in the elementary, but I need to, and I did it for the foster, because for the Foster Care Foundation, what I used to do was I would set up stations, workstations when parents came in to like get resources and things for the kids. I would have stations where I would teach them how to use Word, the kids how to use Word or Excel. And then we'd have a day for the teenagers to come in and I would teach them that. But I haven't done it in a while, but I said, I need to go back to that because I also feel in not just helping just the Black community. I just feel as if I think that's one of the reasons why I leaned towards the foster care. I didn't want to be about just one type of child. I want to be any child in a situation. And to me, it doesn't matter where you're from, where your race, if you're, you know, you're in foster care, the hurt, the pain you feel is the same. Mm. You know, when you're in that environment, there's no privilege anywhere. I mean, that's just my opinion. Your pain, your hurt that you're feeling is just the same. So that's why I chose that. But I think I'm also going to continue that, but also do the Boys Girls Club, which is also not just about Black community. There's also kids from different races that are part of the Boys Girls Club and just mentor there. So I shared that with the team and said, you know, if you want interest in doing some allyship, here's a place you can start. Boys Girls Club. We all have something to share.
Yeah. What I'm taking from this conversation is there's many ways of allyship, and a good way of allyship is by, you know, the most precious gift that we can give is our time, right? And that's supporting. And when we come from a place of giving, I feel like there's more abundance, right? There's more. Mm-hmm. It's not like a zero sum game. It's like we both win in this instance.
Right.
It's us versus them versus you versus me. It's like, you know, one. It's like implying that one person loses and one person wins, right? But that's mm-hmm. not always the case. Like, you know, you can't have win-wins like that. That's like a good way to look at it.
Right. And I feel as if even too, if I'm a child or a young person, I realize that this person here took the time from me. Gosh, mm-hmm. they care, but overall people care. And just even that, because I feel like one of the things I'd love to see is a little bit less anger and revengefulness mm-hmm. that I see kind of going on a little bit. So I feel like those acts of kindness somebody can interpret that. You know what? People do care, you know, and who knows what that, you know, how that might be interpreted or how that can, you know, change someone. So yeah, so from that conversation I had yesterday, he was talking about doing a blogs or something to help with that.
Yeah, if you're open to it, would love to share that as well, because that does sound like a very empowering perspective. And to your point, like, it's always good to have multiple perspectives, right? Like, you never want to be pigeonholed, because at the end of the day, like, everyone's opinion is equal, right? It shouldn't be like right or wrong. It should be like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I never thought of that. Thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right. Right. Because I'm sure we're all impacted in different ways, and you know, whatever part of the community that you're from, and you know, and I don't think we're doing enough of that. And I think that's the only piece where improvement or feedback, I feel at LinkedIn, that needs to be worked on, is just creating that environment where we can do that, or even because even today we're doing the EVS surveys, we're reviewing it. And one of it was on belonging. And I essentially said, lately, I feel as if a lot of inclusiveness. There's so many meetings lately and conferences. And like I said, conversations are things. I said, lately, I feel very included. A lot of inclusiveness going on. But do I feel like I belong? Mm. Not always. Mm-hmm. So even though you're including me and you're including me in these conversations and we're including and having these talks at all hands and we're including a lot of folks, do we all feel like we belong? And I said, I don't fully feel that sense of belongingness only because I can't share. Mm-hmm. And so until I can share with you and you know my thoughts and you know my feelings and I feel like we belong, we're together. But so you can include me all you want. But are you giving me that sense of belongingness by listening to me, by hearing me? And I was telling in the team, I said, I feel like some are heard, but there are others. And I said, not just even me. I said, there are others in the community, other minorities that they, mm-hmm. at this point in time, they may not feel like they belong, right. You know, because like even my, I was sharing with them. I said, one of my neighbors, he's from the Philippines and his wife retired. And they started a restaurant a few years ago, but we were talking last weekend and he said to me, cause you know, Uber Eats has this thing where if you have a black restaurant, the delivery fee service is free. Mm-hmm. So he said to me, so what about my business? Mm-hmm. So he says, if someone's trying to decide between ordering from me and that black restaurant, who you think they're going to order from? The service is free. So he says, my business is now impacted because let's just say my food's a little bit better and normally they probably would have gone, but that place is okay. But guess what? Service is free. You know what? I'm going to order. So he says, even though, yes, you're helping one, but you don't know how it may be impacting another. Mm. And those are the conversations that we need to have or put that out there. That as we do these things, or Mr. Organization or big corporate, do you know that as you think you're helping one group, you're impacting another?
Yeah.
Have you stopped to think about that? That you're putting one group over another group by doing these, or is there a different way to do it? You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But again, we don't know, but we can't know until we have the conversations. But we're not. It kind of goes back to what we're saying. We need to put it all out there and hear from everyone.
Yeah. That's a good takeaway. It's interesting because I think like to your point, like it's like black or white. It's kind of like almost like you have to pick a side, right? It's like, are you with us or against us? And that puts people in the uncomfortable position. Like maybe they have something, a totally different perspective that's maybe, you know, a different color, right? But it's like, nope, you can only pick with us.
You have to pick right.
That's
it's A and B. There's no C. There's no D. There's no A minus. There's no A plus. There's no B. Yeah. It's A or B. That's it. And I think that's kind of go back to where you're saying it's political. And I think that it also lines up with almost like a political ideology, like A is equals this, B equals that. And so if your comment sounds, and you could even be politically A, but understand the B issue. Mm-hmm. You can't even understand that you have to know you, cause then what you're, you know, but you can see both sides. What about people in the middle? There's no middle.
Mm. Yeah. This has been a very thought provoking conversation. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I feel like every time we talk, like an hour just like goes by, like,
I know it does. Could keep talking, but I guess we have to do this again then. Yeah. Certainly, you know, maybe take one tangent of it or maybe talk about some allyship. I'd love to hear more too about your mentoring and what you're doing because I don't know, that's something that I feel like I want to get more involved in. It's a little harder for me being remotely and not in an office and hearing these things. That's why I said, you know what? But there are organizations like Boys Girls Club, the Foster Care Children, there are others, and maybe that's one aspect of allyship that we can maybe expose others to or talk more about. Like, what are some of the things that we can do from that sense? You know?
Yeah, let's do that. So we'll do some, you know, maybe after the vacation. So
right.
Or shut down. But would love to have a full conversation just on more of like the giving back aspects of things. Because honestly, people don't talk about it enough. Like,
no, not like that. Giving up their time. And I remember one time we were having, I know we were wrapping up, but I remember one time my manager had volunteered me to be a part of the, this was when DIBS was just starting, right? And we're trying to establish the whole DIBS program. My manager was like, you should, whatever. So she volunteered me to be interviewed or to be a whatever. And I could tell I wasn't going to be because a lot of my ideas probably weren't going to align so much with the policies. But one of the things I offered and suggested was, and I thought maybe just, again, teaching in elementary school, I says, I know we often have programs and stuff that reach out to college or high school, but honestly, we need to start way earlier than that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about second grade, third grade. Yeah. Where they're starting to formalize and becoming and deciding, oh, I want to be this when I grow up, or you're having those conversations. I mean, I would even go to kindergarten, but we can lay off kindergarten, but start as early where, you know, when they're sitting there and they say, oh, well, I want to be this, and I want to, and have people that come in and you know, them seeing different people, seeing, you know, this race or that race in these professions, or talking about what they did and sharing their stories and say, yeah, you can, and start building those dreams and those hopes and, you know, motivate them from early. Sometimes even when you go to high school, for some kids, it's late.
Right. Yeah.
It's late. You're talking to a kid who has a wall up before you can even talk to them, or you're sitting there with them, or you're doing stuff. You got to tear down that wall.
Yeah.
You could be sitting there. I don't want to say you're not wasting your time, but you're talking to someone who's not even hearing you because there's a wall already built. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you have to reach them before that wall's built.
That's an interesting topic. Yeah, I feel like we can have a whole nother conversation. Yeah. Let's do that, because I think this is a really fascinating topic. And honestly, to your point, like, we don't really talk about, people don't typically talk about these conversations as much as we should. So And then you also have the education background as well. So that'll be...
Well, just being exposed to it. But I'm glad that I'm able to be participating in this and you gave me a forum to kind of voice my thoughts. And I really appreciate that. But like you said, beyond just voicing my thoughts, I said, you know, it's one thing to say how you feel and your thoughts and sharing all that, but what else? And so that's, and especially after my conversation with that gentleman yesterday, it's like, what else? And I wanted to go beyond just sitting there and reading a book, because I see a lot of the sharing of stuff. And I'm like, okay, we're reading the book. And so what? Okay, so we have this information and you're reading more about this and you're reading more about that. And you're reading more about that. And you're doing, and what are you going to do now that you have all this information? You have all these stats about racism. You have all these stats about what happens. Okay, and how does that help? Where is, you know, and that's why I says, I question some of the allyship stuff. You're reading all this content. And what are you now doing with it?
Yeah.
What are you doing with it?
Yeah, that's good. Are you asking me or
just not you? No, the public, just a thought. No, because I see a lot of folks reading, and like one of the ladies I chatted with too, she's totally like, and I know it because I see what she posts on her LinkedIn and I see what she posts in public. She's totally on A side, whatever, you know, like really the majority, and she's really hard. And she, when I was talking to her, and she was telling me about all the stuff she's reading and she's this and she's that. And I hear her and she has friends who are this and that, but I never heard her say what she's doing.
Mm.
No, I think she donates to things, to different, campaigns, right. But I heard a lot of, I know this, I know this, and these are the stats and these are the this. And so I'm like, okay, you have a lot of knowledge, a lot of information. What's next? And I think that's, you know, we need to have a lot of, okay, so what now?
Mm.
What now?
Wow. I do think, yeah, a lot of people are afraid to do something, especially in the age of COVID as well, right? It's kind of like, well, I don't want to go out, or I don't want to like have to
meet people. And, right.
There's always excuses, but it's like, dude, like you can do virtual, like there's so many virtual opportunities. Yes. So
many things we could do or propose. Right. Yes. Yeah. Like if you even think about it, like, think about a lot of the kids in the inner city right now with COVID being home, whose parents may not even in some cases have the level of experience that they do. And it may even simply be technology wise. Yes, everybody knows how to use a computer. Everybody knows how to use a phone. But do some parents know how to go in and configure or set up Zoom and put in the settings? Some even people who are working right here, faculty folks, don't even know how to do it, you know, because we're sending them courses on how to use Zoom and we're giving them courses on how to use Teammates. So you can imagine some kid, especially if you're a high school student who's probably being expected or whose parent, or I wouldn't even say high school because high school students can kids can probably help themselves. But let's say you're in middle school or fifth or fourth grade, where you're probably given level of work that requires certain knowledge, technology, and your parents can help you, or the parents aren't even home. Or like one of my clients was telling me that she has her kids, one's like seven, one's nine, and they're both required to be on the computer. This is when school was in session. She says, which means that there has to be like a laptop or something for both of them.
Right.
Can you imagine that environment? And she says, okay, I can, she says, oh, well, you know, one child borrows my husband's, one borrows mine and whatever. But what if you're in a home where you don't even have one laptop, or if you have one and there's four kids?
Right.
So what if we had, what if during that time, I know it's kind of late now, but maybe who knows if it's coming again, where there were virtual mentorship going on where, you know, you probably had, you know, one student or help out to supplement. Okay. There got to be a lot of kids who are struggling with completing assignments or knowing what they're doing or who are totally overwhelmed from this whole virtual learning. So maybe, again, like you said, virtual mentorship, virtual, what do you help? I'm losing my mind here. You know, when tutoring, yeah, free.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I don't know, that you can help out, that you offer and something.
Yeah, that's a good call to action. Anyone who's listening, who is just reading and not doing anything, that's your...
Yeah, find that student, you know, maybe go out and that child who might need some extra help, just like you said, the tutoring that they don't have now access to, or that teacher who was probably there to help them after school, or say, stay behind and I'll show you. They don't have that now.
Yeah.
You know, or they're home, or guess what? Even if they can, what about that environment where parents are gone and now you have the older kid who's watching the younger ones? They probably can't even focus. And, you know, they don't have that space to kind of focus because they're probably taking care of the younger ones while the parents are gone off to work. And so just in general, kids who are probably doing okay or doing well in school are probably not, because just of whatever the environment or situation might be.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Kind of scared to see what happens after all this aftermath, right? Because we're right in it. So it's hard to see what is happening, because like, it's still happening, you know?
Yeah, I saw some articles here locally in Georgia, and they were actually saying that the results are terrible. Results are terrible for school, for K-12. Yeah.
They're definitely feeling the most, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the rest of us, we can adjust for work, you know, college, you can adjust. I mean, that's part of your routine anyway, life, online learning and all that. And it sounds great, you know, online learning, and we can adapt and it's awesome. But for the K-12, a lot of it's the social, a lot of them is the hands-on with the teacher. And, you know, while the rest of them are working, come here, John, let me show you. And they sit with them and they, okay, this is what you do. Nobody, you know, a lot of that's missing on the K-12. And I think, I would even say more at the elementary level.
Yeah. To talk about. Well, we always have really thought-provoking conversations, but really appreciate our conversation today.
And absolutely, myself too.
Yeah, I hope anyone who is listening is inspired to think of a different perspective. And yeah, stay tuned for part two when we dive in a little bit deeper into how we could take action.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Davidson, for the opportunity, and looking forward. And hopefully we've inspired others. I myself, having this conversation, somewhat inspired myself to do more and take some action. So I'd love to be able to share some of that, those results, in our next conversation.
Yeah, that'll be a good call to action. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed this episode. please subscribe and let me know what your thoughts are. If there were any takeaways, I welcome all positive and constructive feedback and hope you enjoy. Stay tuned for more interesting stories and guests. Take care.